And very nice to see you, Commissioner. I think a day isn't complete unless we're spending some part of it together.
It's been a long time no see. Representative Winkler.
Yeah, actually, almost more than 12 hours. I think the process in which we'll do is, I think we'll continue from where we left off in the last committee meeting, and we'll try and fit it, and then we'll just, you have the questions that we okay. And so we'd like to then continue with on this general discussion. We're not really going into the whole finance committee budget, which we'll get into fairly soon, but right now we're just really trying to hold our questions to this whole issue of internal auditing and how we can move on that issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Hansen, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, although, as a nod to you, Madam Chair, it's still statutorily the Department of Finance until you say otherwise. So I want to make sure I hope my plug in for that. The presentation, members and Madam Chair, that we're working on, we have it up on the screen. We have added a few more slides that encompass some of the initiatives we have in the governor's budget, and we were about 9 slides into it. Before we got started, though, I wanted to just talk about a couple of themes and challenges that we see in the area of internal controls and auditing that I think you will see reflected throughout the areas that you will deal with in your committee, but also broadly in the governor's budget. And my first point is the operations of state government need to adjust with changing times. And we are like, just like all the businesses and everybody in the private sector, we have to adjust to the environment, to the economy, and changing times. My first point, we, like the rest of the economy, or like the rest of businesses, are experiencing the baby boomers aging, and battling with the fact that many of them are getting up close to retirement age, and there's an awful lot of expertise. So there is a trend that Dr. Simpson, our state economist, and Dr. Gillespie, our state demographer, has talked about at various forums that many of you have probably attended. We experience that as well. We also, from a competitive standpoint with our key financial positions, local units of government and the private sector are fairly competitive, and we see that sometimes our star folks are attracted away from to local units of government, which pay more, as well as the private sector. We also have demands and interest in transparency and openness in government. And I know that, Madam Chair, that Representative Winkler has a bill into on opening a portal and trying to make more information available on the web. And I look forward to working with them on that. We have in the advanced stages of planning a website which drills down quite a ways and makes information available that we will talk with you and the other members about. We're still making some final adjustments. But the need to, and it gets to internal controls, making government open, accessible, so that we are accountable to the people that each and every one of us serve. And then finally, we with better IT tools available, and we need more sophisticated end users. So when we have the turnover, when the 20-year individual retires or the 10-year veteran goes into work for Ramsey County or into the private sector, it's a bigger challenge for us to train them in the complex technology that is that we see. And it's also, I want to give you some context, our state government, as you well know, and probably better know in this committee than most of the others, since you see the overall picture, it's a large and complex operation. We have 50,000 state employees here in the state as well as at MNSCU. We have 4,000 of these people who use our financial system, 5 million expenditure transactions, and we have 30,000 employees that submit expense reimbursements at some point in time during a given year. And before I get, we'll talk in a moment about the, we'll continue with our presentation, but I want you to know that I take my responsibilities as defined in statute 16A055 very seriously. It is a humbling thing in your career when you get a job that your job description is in state statute. And it is when the Madam Secretary over here knows. And it is the first thing I did when the governor asked me in his office before Thanksgiving in 2006 was pull out the statute book as I walked out of his office and read 16A055 and the following and accompanying statutes on what my responsibilities are. And the first thing I noticed and took to heart was the language specifically about internal controls and the trust put in the Department of the then Finance to secure and establish a system of internal controls that the state's dollars are used effectively. And they also, the other thing that struck me was, and it continues today, is that it is an ongoing and changing process. And the relationship we have is fairly close and very close partnership with the legislative auditor. We partner on a lot of things. They're on our same floor. If we don't have official meetings, we meet in the lunchroom and in the parking garage. And the points they make, and that it is unacceptable that some of the things we're seeing in our state agencies, and we have to adapt our policies and procedures to make sure and hold our senior leaders accountable for some of the things we've talked about. I will just touch on a few things that we're doing here before I turn it back over to the slide presentation. Our department's holding a financial forum on February 10th for all our senior leadership in our agencies, and it will be a half a day. It is followed by a smaller agencies, boards, and commissions a few weeks later, a program specifically for them designed to utilizing SMART to get at some of their issues. We have, and we'll talk about here in a minute, upgraded our code of conduct training. Four agencies, including ours, have piloted this in the Department of Management and Budget. Everybody from the manager level on up did training in financial ethics to bring awareness and accountability. And then, as I mentioned a minute ago, it's also important, the best way to have accountability in state government is to make our information as accessible and as open to the public as possible. And then finally, before I turn it over to Lori, and we'll both continue with our presentation, the governor's budget, which we will talk about, I suppose, in greater detail at subsequent hearings. Two initiatives, the MAPS, Madam Chair, that you were around for the first go-around and now around for the second, is we have a proposal to make our system more accountable, better management. And we also have an internal control initiative adding 8 individuals to our agency at $700,000 a year to improve our internal controls. Those are some of my opening comments. I know that, Madam Chair, that you have forwarded us a series of questions. I think we'll probably try and get to those in the presentation and be available as we go to any questions you or any of the other members may have.
Okay. Representative Vance, do you have something, by the way?
Yep. Madam Chair, just out of curiosity.
There's kind of a buzzing. So, again, if anyone on the committee or in the room has a phone on, even if it's vibrating and silent, our wonderful technology system somehow interacts with it. So please turn it off. Call us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, Commissioner, was this additional $700,000 before or after the article in the paper on Sunday?
Madam Speaker and Representative Biggin, well
not,
before.
Not quite.
What?
Not quite.
No, it was well before. It is something that we have talked about for some time and have seen. I've seen and monitored and worked with Mr. Nobles throughout the year, and it has become increasingly aware that some of the solutions that we need to enact and work together on, that was something we had to have before. Sunday. We wouldn't have had it ready and printed by then.
We were just impressed by your turnaround.
Yeah. Well, we do think ahead of time. It may not look that way sometimes. But.
Representative, and Madam Chair and Commissioner, and the stories, I think, keep coming because just a couple minutes ago in Public Safety Policy and Oversight, we have the Department of Corrections in there for their kind of overview, or oversight, I mean, and performance report, to find out that, I have their budget right here, it's $954 million, and then about $144 goes to local governments, and they get about $5 million in federal. To find out, when I asked them, how many internal auditors do you have, they said one for funding and programming. So, I mean, it was just a little eye-opening with that, too. But I appreciate you coming before us, and I do like that, the maps thing, too.
Madam Chair, Representative Bingham, you bring up a good point when you mention auditors. I think that as, just from our view, auditing on the back end is not the only and best way to manage an internal control system. Because by the time you audit it, it's already over and done, and the problem's been created. In our department, we have focused long before I've been commissioner, and back several commissioners and governors on front-end training and assistance to agencies. And it is a competing interest between, you know, you want to do the training and the assistance on the front end, but you also have to have the follow-up on the back end. But when you have the challenge that you want agencies to work with us and look at us as partners and not be afraid to communicate with us to get their problem solved. But if we have also a team of auditors that the minute they call with a question, I mean, I would say that how often have you called to the IRS to double check your deductions from 2 or 3 years ago? You're more likely to go to your, you know, it's, so we balance the back end and the front end. But I do recognize that we need to increase our training and assistance. The other thing, just as long as we're talking about it, it's slide, I think, 15 in your packet, so I'll just jump ahead. The code of conduct implementation, we piloted it with NINSCU and the Department of, I think, Corrections 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago, and then this last year was our department and I think the Department of Education. But it is a reminder that no matter who you are or what you're doing in state government, whether you're myself or the governor or you're the guy who oversees the unit that stocks the fishing ponds in northern Minnesota, that there is a fundamental ethic and responsibility to manage state dollars. And again, that is... we're all going to be reviewing that and training on that every year. But also, I think for our smaller agencies, and it's a comprehensive approach, our smaller agencies, and the members on this committee are familiar with the SMART initiative that was in the budget 2 years ago. It is a tool that smaller agencies, if you're located at the Department of Administration, the governor's budget has an additional $145,000 to provide training and assistance in accounting, financial management, and human resources to those smaller agencies that don't have a lot of capacity in those areas. That's not something on my department or DHS or any of the big departments, obviously, that we don't need, but the smaller agencies need that type of assistance.
Has there been any follow-up on the agencies that have had the SMART assistance on how it's used, and is there any follow-up on the financial implications and the performance implications of that?
I know that we have followed up, and it's more of a Commissioner Badgerow question, save it for her, but it has been, you know, frankly, in some cases it has been successful in the... I call it the boxing, the combative sports, have been a frequent user of SMART, and there's one circumstance where you all saw the OLA report that it didn't quite work out as well as it should have. So it has been mixed results, but by providing it more funding, we want to expand it to more agencies. The other thing, as I mentioned a minute ago, the governor's budget includes a new MAPS system. MAPS is our accounting and procurement system. And for those that have been members of this committee before, you've heard us talk about it ad nauseum for about two cycles. And hopefully this time we won't have to. This time it'll get funded, and that'll be the end. And Phyllis, you'll be seeing it again maybe in 20 more years when you're still a state government chair. You'll get three cycles. But it's a, we found, and Madam Chair, I took your words to heart at the last session in this summer about finding ways to match our funding stream with our with the long-term benefits of our core computer systems. And as we get into talking about technology and our technology initiatives, it is, you will see the lease purchase option does that. But it's also, I want to emphasize, in something that Mr. Noble said the other day, it's not good financial management and internal controls is not a matter of just funding a computer system. It's a whole comprehensive approach. So that is why we included we have also a BBS, a budget system replacement project that we have that has been ongoing as well. I know that Helen Roberts has been significantly involved in your fiscal staff as well as others in upgrading our budget system. I talked a minute ago about the financial forms, and that gets at holding our senior leaders in our agencies accountable, personally accountable for the financial decisions.
Madam Chair, just a question on the budget system. I'm curious about the level of coordination between House fiscal staff and is it the Department of Finance who's leading, leading that rollout? I don't know if Ms. Roberts or Assistant Commissioner.
You're on that.
Could help. I think that's that cooperative relationship is productive. I guess I'd like to hear a little more about that.
Mr. Chair, members, fiscal staff were involved earlier last year in several meetings when actually, this goes back more than just last year. We have been consulted at different points on actually even the RFPs for the project. Since the project began, I think our involvement hasn't really happened. I think it's a matter of timing between the session starting and the actual start of the project. But
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, our Deputy Commissioner Stephanie Andrews will talk a little bit more about it, but if you recall, at the end of the 2007 legislative session, on the last couple of nights, there was a provision, Madam Chair, where the carry-forward money was rolled into a 200 account in the special revenue account under the auspices of OET, and we were able to use some of that money to, frankly, it's probably due to the struggling economy, cut a wonderful bargain due to the help of the Department of Administration to be able to move forward on a cutting-edge budget development system. Stephanie can talk about that for a moment.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, just to expand a little bit, as Ms. Roberts said, early on in the project, we did try to have a significant amount of input from legislative staff in both houses, also from other agencies, too. I think that the philosophy of that project, in part related to those conversations, but also one of the reasons why we knew that we needed to replace the system, was that it's really difficult to anticipate going forward what any of you will want to have in addition to what any given governor will want to have for reporting. And so one of our key principles going into the process was trying to design a system that put less burden on agencies to do technical term fussing around with the numbers on the front end that didn't really make a difference to decision making, but also more flexible reporting on the back end so that if you decide that you want a given report, if legislative staff decide they want a given report, we'll be able to do that without the really extraordinary measures that our current very antiquated system requires of us. And so that was really the principle, and as Ms. Roberts said, timing for them has been challenging right now. Just to give you a quick update on where the project is at, Deloitte is the vendor that we chose for that project, and our project team in the agency, which also includes some five or six representatives from other agencies is deep in the process right now of taking a look at our current system, helping Deloitte understand fully what that system is, and also looking at the RFP. And then actually, I heard this last week, the project team got the first look at the very early models of the new system going forward. And so we'll be back to talk with you more about that as we go on.
So as I understand it, the legislators, fiscal staff had interaction with the project team early, but no longer.
Madam Chair, I think that their time, our time, as was the project development phase, they were a key part of that. Once we get a project a demo system to look at, they'll be a part of that. And certainly on the back end, as we work on reporting, we'll keep talking.
Okay, thanks.
Just to continue, again, we bounced ahead to slide number 15. I mentioned earlier in my comments the financial forms we have and our ongoing commitment and effort to keep our senior leaders advised of accounting and financial principles. And then the next point on the slide, strengthening internal control capacity with MMB. We have a proposal in the governor's budget at $700,000 a year going forward to add two people to our treasury. It's a part our treasury unit, which is bonding. We haven't changed our bonding staff in about seven decades. Madam Chair, you and I saw one of the issues this last the summer before or the whole year with Nicollet Island and bonding and, you know, projects that had occurred in the 1970s in which the bonds had been paid off. And yet there's still issues because it was state bonded property. We now, with the advent of billion-dollar bonding bills the last few years and an increased number of local projects, need to have added staff to do some spot auditing and making sure there's compliance with our constitution and our statutes related to bonding. We also envision the remaining six to serve the internal control unit in our accounting services division. And I guess committee members, you're probably familiar with the executive budget officers we have in our budget division. I would, our vision for these is to be a similar function within accounting services, to bring about more front-end training and assistance, assign them to agencies, as well as back-end spot auditing as well, to try and bring some cohesion to, more cohesion to our internal auditing. Again, the transparency project I mentioned, I'm hoping to, I've visited some of you and hoping to get around to more of you, and Representative Winker would love to stop by and show you the project. If you turn the page, maybe now is a good time to... since I started, well, now we'll jump back to page 9. this was all an attempt to answer Representative Bigham's question. So we'll now revert back, and I promise we'll stay in order for now on.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Lori Moe, Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget, Department of Finance. The slide number 9 deals with our internal control policy. I want to talk a little more about that today. As well as talking about some other areas where we have currently got activities in strengthening our internal controls, and then I'll talk in a little bit more detail about the two initiatives that the commissioner just introduced to you. In your packets today, there should be a summary of the internal control policy. I included that for your information in a shorter version. The full policy is available out on our website if you're interested. I believe it's about 7 pages long. This is although it's been in place since 2000, it was updated in 2006 and does include all of the elements of the COSOL framework that you heard about in some detail when the legislative auditors were before you last week. And we have the detailed policy is clear about the responsibility of agency management, lays out the various components of a strong internal control framework, and provides instructions to agencies as to what is their responsibility in that effort. We have provided the policies, the procedures, and some training function, but do rely on the individual agency management for the implementation of that policy. That is true in many areas of our financial management system.
I think that gets us, in a sense, to one of the questions that we submitted, which is, you know, hearing that all this has been in place since OCAS, and what happens after Finance receives an Office of the Legislative Auditor report? What happens? What actions are taken when that happens?
Madam Chair, members, if you will turn to slide 13, there is some information there on how we have historically addressed that. It has been a long practice to review those reports, send follow-up letters, and track the resolution of the findings. The more intensive attention to these findings that we're suggesting in the new initiative would include having the capacity to attend exit conferences with agencies, to hear the discussion between the agency management and the auditors, and to hear firsthand their proposals for addressing those findings, rather than the being limited to a paper review of the reports after they're issued. But the response in general varies somewhat from report to report, depending on the magnitude of the issue, depending on the adequacy of the response by the agency, and depending on if the timeline for resolution seems reasonable. And we will follow up sometimes with face-to-face meetings, maybe to suggest resources to clarify the appropriate course of action.
Okay. What's inappropriate?
Just to follow up on it, I think you've asked for some numbers, Madam Chair. In 1998, the Department of Finance had six kind of people who followed up on the back end on OLA audits, or on OLA audits. By 2002, at the end of the Ventura term, that was two. And then by 2006, the remaining two positions had been absorbed by other members. The duties had been absorbed by other members within the accounting services division of our department. So I think that was one of your questions.
Yeah. But are you telling us that the work was still done even though the divisions disappeared?
I think that as the Madam Chair, the positions that the last position and the mainly coordinated the response between individuals we currently still, you know, positions we still have. When we get audit reports, not only do I get them on my desk and review them and, you know, in serious, you know, ones that I follow up on myself personally with commissioners, but we have our executive budget officers, our team leaders, and our budget director, as well as the deputy commissioner and assistant commissioner. And then if it's related to employee conduct, our assistant commissioner and labor negotiator, Paul Larson, who's here, and we'll talk in a minute, follows up on it. So we have a kind of a group approach to it. I think we recognize that we're going to do a better job internally to coordinate our responses to these as we go forward.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Hansen, our assistant commissioners. I do better with like an illustration. So tell me, with the recent legislative audit report and the department, the personal care attendants, and how do you factor in that
how could it have been better? I mean, they have their own internal investigation unit that actually, when I asked if somebody could was fired over this, the response was no, and they didn't believe that anybody should have been, which was a little alarming to most of us around the table. So tell me if you were involved in that at all, if you think you should have been, if life was perfect.
Life is never perfect. Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, the first point, it's interesting that the Department of Human Services has an internal auditing unit. So there's some of the higher profile issues in the last few years have occurred in departments that have a strong internal audit department. So it makes the case for, yes, you need to audit on the back end, but you need to make sure you have internal controls and training and assistance on the front end. In this specific situation, when the report was issued, when I got it, I called Commissioner Ludeman and discussed, I think it had been something, of course the OLA had been in the agency quite some time earlier, and he had a number of issues that are incorporated in reforms in the governor's budget. So I had communicated repeatedly with him on that, and we have a follow-up meeting scheduled, I think it's late next week, with his PCA team to provide us a progress report on how the rest of the issues that are outlined are going.
And if I might, so when were you first aware of the problems being identified by the legislative auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, when I got the report.
And
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Hanson.
Just remembering a little bit from when I was on the Audit Commissioner report. Don't they send you, before the report is issued, don't they send you a preliminary copy so you
That's
get the
I
response?
Mean. Yes, oh, I okay. get, right. When I say I, Madam Chair, when I get that, get all of them pre-issue.
And
that's what I mean.
Representative, Madam Chair and Commissioner Hanson, is that because the Department of Human Services has their own internal unit, or you're just not involved? I mean, I'm not understanding why you weren't. If you're like the czar of accountability for the state, then why? I mean, I'm just don't understand why your department wasn't at all aware through the process, or can you explain that?
Madam Chair,
are you siloed with this function, or?
Representative Holberg, I never like to be called a czar because the last one was shot. But I'll turn this over to Assistant Commissioner Moe for the answer.
Madam Chair, members, generally
the last one actually was Judge Kenneshaw Mountain Landis. I thought he was the last star that we had.
Baseball.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, the legislative audit reports are preliminary drafts are released to the agencies involved, and that includes finance if part of the finding is an element of the corrective action plan that, or the recommendation for corrective action plan that needs to be addressed by the Department of Finance. So there are some cases where we see those in advance. I think in general, though, the legislative auditor would tell you that they limit early distribution of those to, because they're controlling the availability of non-public data during the course of an investigation. I think it's a statutory reference that protects that. But in general, on these issues, when we get involved in them does vary somewhat. In some cases, there'll be a problem identified by the agency before an auditor is even involved, and they will call us for advice or for assistance or to verify that their course of action is correct. I would answer that it varies depending on circumstances. In some cases, we may have talked with the agency help them address a solution and have taken action on that before an audit report is issued. But other times we're not involved till after the fact.
And if I might, just one follow-up. I'm sorry you've taken this time. I'm just trying to understand the dynamics between the different groups. Is there a difference in how you interact with agencies that have their own internal audit staff versus those that don't? And if they do have their own internal audit staff, do they also forward their reports to you?
Madam Chair, members, in the audit reports once issued, we receive copies of all of those, whether they have an internal audit unit or not. The difference comes in the follow-up. In many agencies that have internal audit staff, at least in the largest ones, they are one of their main roles is responsibility within that agency for tracking those findings and ensuring that the right corrective action plans are put into place, so that in those situations, then that's often our contact for information on the follow-up.
But again, I'm sorry, but just for clarification purposes, if an agency has their own internal audit department and they discover a problem, this doesn't have anything to do with the legislative auditor. This has to do with how state government works. And so if they have their own internal audit department and they recognize that there's a big problem, are they required to let the Commissioner of Finance know about that, or does it just they just take care of it and nobody ever knows?
Madam Chair, Representative, your question is whether their own internal audit reports, if they submit those to us?
For example, had Sonia
Pitt's
activities been discovered by Minnesota Department of Transportation's internal audit department? I know something about transportation, so I'll go there for comfort. If they had discovered it on their own, would they have been required to report to your office about the fiscal problem in their agency, or does it all stay internal to MnDOT and nobody ever finds out about it unless somebody stumbles on it, let's just say?
Madam Chair, members, there's not a requirement to report that to the Commissioner of Finance, but if agencies are aware of fraudulent activities, there is a statutory requirement that be reported to the legislative auditor.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. We're sort of going down the same line of questioning, which is, I think, we're trying to figure out, I think, who's responsible for what. Because you have a lot of agents, I mean, the vast majority of agencies, boards, and commissions don't have their own internal audit office or staff.
Let me just interject one little off-the-wall comment, which is that this committee really likes to say things go right, but when things don't go right, we really want to know who we get to blame for it going wrong. So, just Madam
Chair. That wasn't my question, Madam Chair.
I know. That was my comment.
Can I give another example? Go on. I guess an example of our interaction with an internal auditing function, and it's the fraudulent activity that occurred in the Department of Human Services. And in that situation, my department uncovered the fraud, reported it and contacted the Department of Human Services, who then reported to the legislative auditor. And then, as the activity got then reported to the U.S. District Attorney, the information flow was mostly to DHS, who then primarily the primary contact with the OLA. And we were kept informed and part of the group, but it was the internal auditors and the commissioner of DHS who I kept in contact with. But in this particular case, they dealt directly with the OLA and the district attorney's office. That's Representative Winkler, specific example.
Well, let me just back up, because we had Minsky in here on Tuesday, and they, I think, presented on kind of a model of what an internal audit and what good internal controls would look like in a federated, if you will, system. They've got campuses and they've got a central office, and the central office has a very clear policy and a very clear commitment to making sure that all the campuses are following through very carefully on any audit findings and implementing a good system of internal controls. And I think that there was kind of broad sentiment anyway that they were doing a great job. And the testimony we got from them was that, you know, the goal ultimately is to have reasonable assurance that money is going where it's supposed to go, and that you set up a system of internal controls to prevent fraud and to make sure, or misspent money or all sorts of other things. And there's sort of a formula to it. They start with the town at the top, or the management priority. They add to that internal audit capacity. They have good policies, risk assessment, and they have this standard of this of reasonable assurance that they're working towards. And certainly, internal audit function is an important part of that formula, according to them, as well as the management, talent policies, etc. Do you agree with that basic formula as a department, that that is what the hallmarks are of good the formula for achieving good control over money?
Madam Chair, members, certainly we agree with the testimony that you heard about the importance of a strong system of internal controls. An important component of that is the tone at the top. If you have all the policies and procedures in the world, will not give you a strong financial management system if there isn't a broad understanding that's important to the organization and that people will be held accountable for those actions. In terms of the internal audit function, I think absolutely they add value in many of the organizations where they exist. Whether that is the right model for some of our very small boards and commissions, I'm not as sure of.
But, Madam Chair, I think the point is that it should be out somewhere, not necessarily, you know, combative sports where the two employees should have one of them designate, you know, only assigned to internal auditing, but that the function should happen somewhere. And if they can't provide it to themselves, then somebody else in state government presumably should provide it for them. And I guess the question would be, do you think that at some point every dollar of state money that flows through an agency or a local government should have some kind of audit trail other than maybe the legislative auditor to at some point look after where that money is?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, you're making some good points. In the case of the legislative auditor, they have 60 auditors, and they still take them about 3 years to cycle around to every agency. And, you know, and it's almost hit or miss when they get to the programs. Our emphasis, that's why our emphasis with the resources we have traditionally at the Department of Finance, not just as myself as commissioner, but all my predecessors back into the 90s and back, has been the training and assistance on the front end. Now, even though they have that 60, you know, one of our initiatives is we're talking about adding 8 people to help us facilitate and train on the front end and spot audit on the back end. So the kind of function that MinSCU has is at this point quite a significant difference from what we have. Although when you factor in the OLA, it's probably similar.
Madam Chair, I take that to mean that we can't afford it for state government. And that traditionally we've not felt the need to do so, but at any rate, it's not something worth the money.
No, I actually think it is worth the money. It is something that, in this case, the auditing is occurring, and that's why we have the close, strong partnership with the legislative auditor. Our initiatives are trying to get at more of the front end to shut off these problems before they get there. The maps, if it goes online in 2 years, will give us stronger management functionality. But the internal control unit, the assigning of agencies per internal controller to help on the front end and audit on the back end will strengthen our capabilities. But it is not Representative Winkler, the 60 auditors that the OLA has.
Madam Chair, we hear back and forth, I guess, with Representative Pepin about this already, but the legislature funds 60 auditors out of the legislative budget. There's not a particular reason why the executive branch couldn't decide that there was a priority in having internal auditors available. And I'm not saying that internal auditors are the end-all be-all, but I'm concerned that when we have a list of agencies with internal audit offices, the list leaves out the PCA, the Department of Finance, Department of Administration, DOLLI, DEED, Health, Public Safety, and the Department of Education. Those are, I mean, and among others, the Commerce. And that's just an off-the-top-of-my-head list. That means that those are all people who don't have this internal audit function happening. I'm not saying finance should do it. The question is it not important, or should we be doing it?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, it is absolutely something that should be prioritized, which we have initiatives in our budget. But looking back on the history of this committee and Madam Chair, as much as I love coming in and see you every year, this committee, doesn't matter who's in control, doesn't matter who's in the governor's office, the targets in this committee are always not as popular as even in good times. And I've worked at the Capitol since 1994, and even in the days of the Carlson administration, we had money flowing everywhere. Madam Chair, you didn't get big targets then either. So it is also a function of the difficulty, Representative Winkler, of convincing the general public and legislators that funding our internal computer systems, the infrastructure that allows us to deliver services, at times is not as popular as pick your program, money for K-12, money for human services, money for local government aid. It is a difficult thing to compete with. And I think that's the reality that, Madam Chair, you're aware of. We've talked about, you and I have commiserated at the end of session about your target and our efforts to get it higher than it has been.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the question is either,
to talk about it.
Either for the commissioners or the assistant commissioners. I've been following the questions of the other members, and I think they're all great questions. I keep going back to the 60 auditors after the fact, not a lot in the front end. And so I'm going to ask a very direct question to you. Are we spending our very limited state resources in the best way? In other words, if we were doing our job properly by putting more internal controls and more internal audits in these agencies, commissions, et cetera, would we have the need for as many auditors? So is there a better utilization of the limited dollars we have? So that's my first question. The second part of my question is, I'm looking at page 13 where you said you sent a letter to agency commissioners requesting quarterly reports on status of implementation of recommendations. I'm not clear if that's just to agencies or if it's also to the councils, the commissions, and the boards. And then it just struck me that this is just a very, this isn't your fault, this is, I don't believe, but it just strikes me as a very weak thing to do. In other words, I don't see where there are any controls that we have where there's any penalties. So if I'm a council and I've had a bad audit 3 times in a row and I still don't have my ducks in a row, and I question the legislative auditor on this, this really seems like there's nothing that can be done. So we can put all the internal controls and we can put all the audits in place and we can send all the letters we want. But if there's no teeth in place, then it all does no good. So I would just like your reaction on that, and then the other part about are we spending our money in the best way possible.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, I think to the answer to your first question, we need to, I think you can have all the auditors in the world, but if you don't train people well, you don't have leadership at the top, you don't hold people accountable, I'll get to that in a minute, you're going to need all of those auditors, which is why we have the emphasis on the front end. We're asking for additional resources to beef up our front and the tail end of our process. So we need both, I guess, is the answer to the question. And as far as the second one, it's about holding employees, you know, if it's up three times in a row, and it gets to be the challenge of the boards and commissions. They're usually appointed, your staff and the boards and commissions, as well as you well know, since you're state government, are appointed by the boards to the boards are appointed by the governor, and then they appoint the executive director, so they're employees of the board. And if somebody is consistently not abiding by or if there's fraudulent activity, then there needs to be human resources type of action. And those are things we have, and that's why our state labor negotiator and Assistant Commissioner Paul Larson is here, because we have, at when appropriate, have turned those situations over to the county attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Hansen, I guess I'm still trying to understand why I've seen some of these audits three times in a row. One in particular I'm thinking of, I won't name what it is, but they had a very bad audit in 2002, in 2006, and in 2008. And I don't believe it's just one person. I believe it's the specific organization. And so there's a systematic problem there that can't be addressed by human resources going in and talking to that one employee. And I'm just trying to... It's frustrating to understand what the punishment is. If I'm the head of the boxing commission, what's my punishment other than perhaps they don't get funded again by us, which is our job, but other than that, what's the...
Well, they didn't get funded in the governor. They lost their funding in the governor's budget.
Well, but the governor's budget isn't passed yet, so we'll still see. But
that's why it's the governor's budget, not...
But... you know, nonetheless, I wasn't in the legislature in 2002. I was in the last 2 years. But I'm just trying to understand what can we do. Obviously, the councils, we can just not fund them. We can't just not fund agencies, though. So I'm a bit torn as to what action we can take, how much power we have. Because it just looking at what you do is great. But, you know, working with the agency and trying to do it, it's sort of... you know, it just seems like you're keep saying, don't do this again, don't do this again, don't do this again. Well, and what? And that's the part I'm struggling with.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, wants some of the things that you're right, that they do reoccur. What we had, over the last few years, I know the health boards have combined, you know, to central units of administration with human resources and payroll. So, rather than each one having their own. The purpose for us funding the SMART initiative is to get at these small boards and commissions, to get at the combative sports and these others where a lot of times they have one executive director and one, you know, and a administrative assistant and one other person. And, you know, from 2 years to 2 years to 2 years, it would be better to have them utilize our SMART initiative and consolidate and combine services. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, I would just say that repeat findings are unacceptable. And so I just want to say, too, that when we see those come through and we see the same finding that we've seen before, that's just unacceptable. We work, I'd say those certainly get our attention even more than the other findings. We certainly talk with the agency. I think the discussion you're having here, I think we all need to make it more uncomfortable when those things happen, because they shouldn't happen. That's the audit finding is already signaling that something has happened and has gone unresolved long enough for it to show up in an audit. And if it happens again, I think we all need to keep asking questions. The example that you're referring to, we all, I think, say, what can we do different on that in that case? Obviously, there have been a lot of different changes in governance mm-hmm. and all of those things in that area, and it still doesn't seem to be doing it. So all I can say is that I don't want you to underestimate how important we think it is, too, when we see a repeat finding, and we'll have to keep talking, I think, about how to deal with that.
And, Madam Chair, another good thing is you can have as many of these hearings. I'll show up every week if you want to talk internal controls, because it strengthens the message. It sends a message that you're going to, as a funding division, when other, you know, when people come before you, and your colleague funding divisions, that you're going to hold us to the fire. And I think that's very important.
Thank you. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think actually the conversation is building quite nicely. I want to just share a couple of examples as contrasts of, I think, where things have worked and not worked, and then I think it's a structural question.
Okay.
I was involved in the Sonia Pitt situation. Somebody blew the whistle to me at the Emergency Operations Center.
I was aware.
On Monday after the bridge. So you know my involvement with the story. I do know that the MnDOT, if I have the timing right, that the MnDOT Office of Internal Audit was investigating in July for travels and expenditures. And not to vilify an individual person, but really to point out that she was still allowed to go on her trip. She was still allowed to continue to do the activities that were causing trouble and were ultimately alleged theft. There wasn't a culture even as strong as the Office of Audit is there, and they have a very strong office. And
30 of them.
And they do a good job, but I think it's clear evidence of somebody not having the guts to just say, hold on a second, time out. I don't think you should be going on that trip, or I don't think you should be going on that part of the trip. Those are not fun conversations to have in the limited management experience I've had, but you have to do them. So there's an Office of Audit presence, very strong one, and they were actively after something and didn't mitigate behavior or even say, hey, you know what, we can't tell you anything else. All we can tell you is that you should be watching all employees travel or all employees' cell phones. You know, I understand the labor issues involved, but the system worked in some way, but really did not work. And had the bridge response been worse, or had the bridge scope been worse, MnDOT was absent. Kathy Clark, God bless her, did a phenomenal job on the ground for 48 hours, and then they didn't have folks who knew the words to use on the radio. Contrast that with the Department of Commerce that I work with often, and they don't have an office about it. $3/4 billion budget. I actually added it to Representative Winkler's list deliberately because they don't. My understanding is they can't sneeze without signing off on, I authorize myself to sneeze, and then as the manager and funny as they are
very good.
They are so button tight that, you know, we're talking about a few $100 million of new energy efficiency money coming to the state energy office, and I have full confidence we're going to deliver every single dime of that money into programs and do it efficiently, and I will be able to go around the state and answer any single question about the work that we're putting together. There's a different culture there. And somehow that culture of leadership exists in the Department of Commerce and the culture of accountability. So my training is in architecture, and I'm trying to figure out what's the structure, what's the path, where does the buck stop? Does the buck stop with you, Commissioner? I mean, I want to solve this problem. I'm not trying to do the blame game here. I actually want to know, I want to be able to explain to my constituents and for them to read in the paper that the buck now stops clearly with this person.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, some excellent examples. I agree that Commerce, from the budget items they submit to how they're managed, it always is buttoned pretty tight. I think that when your question to where the buck stops, it is internal control policy is the response. We provide training and assistance, but agencies are responsible for establishing their own internal control policies. Senior leaders in the agencies have a responsibility to manage and to be aware of the policies and procedures. They're all going to get training in ethics and to remind them. But the buck stops with the leaders of the agencies. It stops with us. It stops with me. And it's to bring and strengthen that culture of good financial management.
A follow-up, Madam Chair? I appreciate that at some point, but I'm also a little bit frustrated because, as you said, the buck stops and you listed three or four people and three or four different paths. You know, I think that there's capacity building, training, you know, a real strong ethic of accountability and close management and trusting managers, because you know that if you hire, you know, Representative Coonan to run a program, that he's going to run it really tightly so you trusted, but you're willing to call him on the carpet if something's going on. And he's willing to call me as his, he's my supervisor, he's willing to call me on the carpet. I think that one of the things that we need to work to do is to be able to communicate clearly to the public, and also to be able to, I'm not convinced that we need that this is a technology solution. I'm more and more
only. I agree with you. It is not. I didn't say it was the only. I think it helps.
Yeah, and I'm after solving this problem.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really in the spirit of collaboration. He's as pointed and assertive as I'm being. I think that we want to solve this problem. And I know the chair doesn't like zero-based budgeting term, but if we're after performance budgeting, how about that? If we're after performance budgeting, we need to know that every single dime is being effectively delivered in the way that we want it to be delivered. And I think we need to do more follow-up. I think we need to do more. I want to know where the buck stops and who's going to really be the tiger in there to make sure that every single dollar is being spent wisely. And I'm hoping, Commissioner Hanson and Commissioner Andrews and Ms. Mills, I'm hoping, Commissioner, that it's you.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalen, I don't want to cut off the Commissioner because that would be send the wrong signal, right? So,
well done.
It's strange to say I appreciate these discussions because they're not that much fun, but these are just the kind of discussions that help all of us go ahead. I just want a little... I've been with the department for a long time. I think that as you're talking about how do you know where the buck stops, for example, Commissioner Wilson does a tremendous job at commerce. It's partly why that agency is as buttoned up as you say as it is. I think that we see our job in the department as to some extent, assessors, diagnosers, triages, and gap fillers, because we know as people come in and out of government, there are going to be some commissioners, some financial staff that are more adept, more familiar with the policies and procedures, and some that are less. And our job is to constantly be assessing who needs more help, who needs less help, where do we have to make sure that we're providing the best that we can do so that agencies manage their money. And I think that the initiatives you're seeing and the discussion we're having hopefully point out that we see that there's some places we can augment our ability to do that, and that we're pretty firm about the need to do that. But it is that constant, an agency 1 year is very strong. Key people leave, and all of a sudden you have an agency that needs daily handholding in a way it hasn't needed for years. That's our challenge, is to try to make sure that we're always doing that assessment. I think one of the things as we look at a broader agency focus with the merger, we now have more points of information we can pull together, so that we can have a conversation internally when we see stress on the HR side, where they're not able to fill accounting positions in an agency, or stress on the financial side. And we can have a better conversation to say, gosh, I'm hearing a lot of questions from such and such agency, and hopefully get in there on the front end before you see an audit report that has findings that you find and we find unacceptable. So that's our philosophy. We hope to be able to get there.
Okay, we do need to move a little faster, but Jeremy.
I appreciate, Madam Chair. Actually, that just maybe for future discussion. But I'm wondering if certainly the folks I work with at the State Energy Office are working at 200 and 250% of capacity right now individually, and I'm wondering if we should consider the impact of hiring freezes as strong of a principle they are in terms of stopgap measures in terms of budget, whether they actually accentuate and worsen the problem rather than help it, because I know that's tougher to be accountable and to hold others accountable when you're barely treading water.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Schiffmeyer. Again, if we can try and condense things as much as possible.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, thank you for being here today. Yes. And I know these are grueling things, but they do tend to yield that good results and all that, going to
Madam discussion. Secretary, this is fun compared to the Ways and Means hearing I was in last time.
Oh, okay. I'm not finished yet.
Oh, my goodness.
don't challenge us.
No, okay.
It's better to come in with
I take it back.
Okay. No, I won't do that then. I do have two parts to this. One of the things that I noticed when the Office of Enterprise Technology was in, Minsky was in, and probably the theme that I, in listening to them, that I really heard was the difference between an employee and an owner. They really had an ownership Chancellor was, you know, you really sense that. You sense that in Chris Busey in his presentation. But I also noticed between the two of them that OET and Minshew both had former Office of Legislative Auditors who had been with the OLA for about maybe 20 years or so, who were now in one of those agencies. And they also had an insight and an understanding. They had been at the end, now they were up front, and they kind of knew the end, and now they're working up, you know, kind of seeing that. I think that really does make a difference, and I wish we could tap into some of this OLA expertise and what I've seen in those two. And maybe you can have 2 years in OLA and then you have to go somewhere else so that you can take all of that and put it in at the front end, because they get trained into a different kind of approach there. And I also thought about your EBO, your Executive Budget Officers. You kind of have a system of EBOs that you've got there that really are right now meant to be, although, you know, my experience, I don't know if it was as strong as it could be. You kind of have a system there. But I did see this real distinct situation between that enterprise ownership and the connection with the OLA former experience that I think is really insightful to see that connection. If you had any comments, and I did have one other thing different from this, by the way.
Madam Chair, Madam Secretary, it's a good point. The I don't know if any of those auditors are going to be leaving anytime soon because you authorized, I think it was in the last legislative session, their own compensation plan. I don't think that we can afford too many of them to come to our agency. But I think what you're getting at is the partnership that not only we have to have with the legislative auditor, but with you and all working together on these issues. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, and I sense the sincerity of that. Madam Chair, sorry.
Let's try and get through this list, and then let's try and
one other
finish up.
Oh, you one other?
Okay.
Yeah, I just have one other. This is on a different subject. Okay. With the realization that we may be having federal money coming into us, and possibly a big pipe and a big, almost a flood of it, and that can provide particular challenges for those federal dollars coming in, especially when you're not quite sure where they're coming. It's really hard to anticipate. Are we ready for the financial strains that it's going to take in receiving those federal dollars, welcome as they may be? They still bring upon it the good side and then the hard side.
Yeah.
And making sure we keep that. We saw this in other areas already before you get this big influx. And then, you know, 2 years later, you got all this mess situation that the money all came in and it wasn't handled properly. Are we ready for that?
Madam Chair, Madam Secretary, the federal funding that we're getting are in areas where we have an infrastructure and we get federal funding anyway. I would worry more if it was coming from somewhere, flowing into some agency that didn't have any infrastructure at all. I would worry if it just, I know the legislature doesn't get federal funding, so I'm going to use you as an example. If all of a sudden you were getting $10 million, it would be, how would you process it? What would you do? Where would it go? How would you do it? If it's money coming into the Department of Human Services, we have...
You think they'll do as good a job as they did that with the health match money that came into them?
Who?
They'll do as good a job
with
the health match money that came in with to them? Sorry, inside joke.
Yeah. Anyway,
we'll have a tally for that.
But anyway, just to finish my point, okay. Madam Secretary, we have the infrastructure in place. You look at the bills and where the money is coming in, and it also is just to remind, as the members know, that money coming in is has to be, the Constitution requires before we spend it that we get your appropriation authority. So it's not like all this money's going to flow in and we're going to run around and spend it without you. I learned that with the I-35 bridge, that the money that is the sole prerogative of it passes your approval before the governor gets a chance to sign or not sign it.
Well, we'll discuss the constraints on that also. But, okay, let's go down the list and then hopefully we'll finish this. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and testifiers. I have an observation, and I wanted to maybe try and draw a distinction and make a clarification, and then see if you agree with my comments. I think we're confusing the difference between financial auditors and the skills and professional competencies of people who are responsible to validate the accuracy of a financial statement and internal audit, which is responsible to take many of the findings that come from the financial audit, but who have much more of a business process perspective and try to actually improve the internal operations and the internal controls. And I think those are two separate and distinct skill sets. So one, I think we're confusing terms quite a bit here in many of our discussions, and it's important to realize that. So observation number one is that I think in many ways we have kind of a design problem here. You know, one of the differences between MNSKU and this situation is that MNSKU has a board, and they have a subcommittee of that board that is an audit committee that is separate and distinct from the executive branch agencies, if you will, of MNSKU. And so we don't have that here. So I think there's a governance design problem, as well as this kind of muddling of a very important distinction between financial audit and financial auditors and internal audit and business process improvement. So I'd be curious if you agree with that statement in general. And then my observation is that MAPS represents a huge opportunity for the state of Minnesota to really improve business processes, to perhaps even consolidate functions, because that's where you really reduce risk. You can throw as many internal auditors and as many auditors on top of poorly designed business processes, and you don't reduce any risk. So I'm curious if you're looking at MAPS from the lens of really improving and consolidating business processes and maybe even functions across agencies in the state of Minnesota, and if you'd agree with my comments about the overall design and governance.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that in terms of your distinction, yes, I think that it's easy to get those terms confused, and as you know, they're different things. I would like to talk a little bit about MAPS just to make it a little more real, because what you're saying is exactly the conversation we keep having. So with all this discussion, what would MAPS actually do? And Ms. Moe, I think, has a couple of examples just to make it a little more real for people about how would this system actually make some changes.
Madam Chair, members, the new a replacement accounting system, part of our planning effort has included looking at our business processes, specifically looking at areas where we have some unique requirements that don't fit very well with the available software, and asking why is it that we do things so differently and can we do them better. And we expect to have another round of business process redesign discussions following the selection of the software, both to strive to get to the most efficient processes and also to design the processes to best fit with the vanilla form of the software, so that we don't have expense in the to modify the software and also expense to maintain those modifications in the future for future upgrades. But we also expect some specific functionality that will help us maintain a stronger internal control environment. One of the areas where we've had some problems with our current system is in the area of security. Not only will the new system have more robust security to deal with the ever-changing threats in our IT world today, but we'll also have functionality that will better allow us to limit employees' access to the functionality that they need to do their jobs. Currently, we have some limitations so that an employee who needs very simple access to a single transaction type has to be given access to a group of permissions that then allow them more access than they really need.
We also currently have a requirement where our executive budget officers have to approve certain transfers before an agency can enter that transaction in the accounting system. Currently, while the system has a field to for them to enter their approval of those transactions, there's not a hard edit to prevent the transfer from being made in advance of the transfer. And then finally, we expect to get a workflow technology which will allow the automatic passing of transactions throughout the approval process. So for an example, a transaction that previously was reviewed and approved manually on paper before it was entered into the accounting system will now pass electronically to the approver before it's finalized. And in that way, they'll see it after it's actually been entered into the system. So there's been a data entry error or a coding error. They'll be looking at the actual transaction that's been entered. So those are just a few examples, but we think there's, both in terms of functionality and in business process, there are real opportunities. It's certainly not the whole story, but we think there are many advantages.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the sense or the takeaway I get here is that you see the finance department's role as being kind of a, I think, training and triage are two of the words that you use, and I think I've seen this in the code of ethics or whatever that is, that each agency head ultimately is responsible for setting the tone at their agency, the management tone, and we keep hearing this tone at the top or culture. Commissioner Wilson is apparently an excellent example of setting the right management tone at Commerce and creating the right kind of environment there. But I guess the question is, that's sensible. I can understand that it's dispersed. There are many agencies, boards, and commissions. There's a lot of money, a lot of employees, a lot of points of entry into the system. But the question, I think still the question has to be, who ultimately is responsible for setting the tone? And setting a priority. If it's not the Department of Finance and it's up to each individual commissioner, then it seems to me the governor is the one who has to set that tone with each of the commissioners. And I don't see in this system how we can look, and we can redesign it. I think there's a lot of merit to that consideration of an audit board. But it seems to me that it's either you or it's the governor who has to be the point of accountability in the system. And I don't know.
I think it's both of us, Representative Winkler. That is our responsibility. It's the responsibility starts at the top. We are responsible for setting the processes and procedures. We had the dialogue today sharing with you and the strengths and weaknesses that we have and submitted the resources we need to strengthen some of the things we're doing, but it starts with myself setting the tone with fellow colleagues. It starts with this committee. I'm holding hearings like this. It starts with the legislative, the legislative auditor's continued report, and it's a partnership that we all share. But I will set the tone in our administration.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to go back to the Code of Conduct. This was prepared for us, it's printed for us without, there's no enactment date or policy date on there. And I'm just wondering when the Code of Conduct came into existence.
Madam Chair, members, if you look at slide 11 and 12 in your handouts, there is some additional information on the Code of Conduct policy. It's a policy that's been in development. Well, it was first drafted a couple of years ago and was initially implemented at MNSCU and at some pilot facility agencies. In addition to MNSCU, Education, Corrections, and Minnesota Management and Budget Finance, we implemented pilots. The goal of the policy is to strengthen the internal control environment and to make it clear that
the agency management is responsible for setting that tone at the top to ensure that they have the communication channels in place so that if there is a problem that someone is aware of, that it gets reported appropriately, and it draws attention and awareness to the responsibilities of all of the financial people with financial responsibilities. We initially, after it was drafted, we initially implemented it as a pilot rather than mandating it as a statewide policy. Out of concern for implementing a policy that would really have meaningful impact, we wanted to make sure we weren't asking agencies to take on an additional training burden only to get sort of a rote sign-off that really didn't have the desired impact. What we have learned since has been very positive, and the plan is to roll that out statewide this year.
Madam Chair, do you have a specific date? So you're saying it will be fully implemented as of July 1st, or?
Madam Chair, members, we are, currently we have a project underway to update the training materials for agencies. We expect to have that done by the end of February, and we will be providing information to all agencies on that at the financial forums that we're holding later in February. The deadline for implementation, we have not finalized yet. If it's not the end of the fiscal year, I'd expect by end of summer.
Right, Madam Chair, I have a couple more. And that kind of leads into what I was going to ask next, because to me a code of conduct is kind of like an oath or a pledge that doesn't necessarily ingrain it in people unless they have some training and have some follow-through. So I just wanted to know about mandatory training. What kind of requirements, who is going to be expected to participate, when will they have that, how often will they have that, and just a little bit more depth and clarity to how you're going to actually make sure this is implemented and there is follow-through.
Madam Chair, members, currently we have developed the curriculum for three different training sessions. One is an initial training specifically geared towards agency heads and their role in implementing the code. Another is an initial training for the agency employees with financial management responsibilities. And then the third is a follow-up training to be delivered annually to refresh people's memories on their responsibilities and which they would be required to complete prior to an annual certification process.
Madam Chair, the other comment I wanted to make was, according to this code of conduct, you're kind of talking about the responsibility of the agency head and senior management. Is there another code of conduct for an individual employee? Because on here, there's nothing that indicates what their personal responsibilities are or how they are supposed to act, what their code is of conduct is to be. If I'm reading it correctly, I don't see if you are an employee of this agency, you should act in this way.
Madam Chair, members, it does address the employee level as well. Maybe that's not clear in our summary materials. The full policy is available on our website, and the training, as I said, there are different versions to address the employee versus the agency head level.
So this code of conduct is not the complete code of conduct?
No, Madam Chair, Representative, it's a summary document just for your information here today.
You get to it on the web by going to Department of Finance, and then if you Google code of conduct, you'll get that.
MMB.
What? I looked at the statute and it still says finance.
Well, it is statutorily. You about this summer.
I will have this discussion.
Madam President, can I just ask, is the training going to be mandatory for people and new people coming in?
Yes.
So a new executive director for an agent for a board, board members and hired by the board. The board and the executive director will all have mandatory training on how to handle money.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, you have authority to do that since you're the executive branch.
Yes.
Okay.
The clock stops here according to
Representative
Scanlon.
You may be sorry you said that. So often.
Madam Mayor. Commissioner, I think Representative Winkler finally got the answer that I was looking for, but if I can restate it. We know that your department is responsible for doing the training for all the agencies.
Yes.
Okay. So it is reasonable then to affect that you know what's happening and perhaps should have an enforcement role in that. Is that correct? Can we stop there, or do we need to find somebody else that's going to be have ultimate knowledge of what's going on regarding the finances within our agencies? And I realize state government is huge, but I think that's what we're looking for, is who's the ultimate person to go to.
Well, in some sense, it is the Office of the Legislative Auditor is the person who has the ultimate oversight.
Well, he does the oversight, but normally that, to me, is kind of after the... That's where you're calling in, to me, an outside auditor versus what the Department of Finance is. And that's what I'm trying to clarify. Are those correct assumptions?
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, I think that, as you heard, clearly the commissioner, the buck stops there, to use his phrase. I think in terms of training, I think that it is a partnership between agencies. And so I don't want to leave the impression that we are the only people to provide training. Agencies, an agency as big as MnDOT, an agency as DHS, they clearly have a role with us in training their management. And I think that one of the things we need to do as we're looking to institutionalize more of the sometimes scattershot approach that we have, and that's something we're continuing to look at, ways that we can make that a more effective curriculum as opposed to here's this training and here's this training. But we clearly need to work with agencies to do that. And so I think ultimately, yes, it's our responsibility to make sure that to the best of our ability and perhaps beyond, that we can make sure that people have the training that they need to fulfill and meet the controls that we've set in place. It is a partnership in terms of how that's carried out. Sometimes agencies are better positioned to do that because there are agency-specific pieces, be it a systems, be it a policies, that they may know best and that they can implement.
Madam, just one more fact to you, Representative Mason. The internal audit division of MnDOT alone would comprise over 10% of the personnel in our agency. So then it's a necessity to partner with these big agencies. But as I said, it's our responsibility to set the tone and work in our partnerships with everyone else. And
thanks.
Representative Kaylin DeBlock up here.
Is there anything on the slides that we missed that we need to get in?
Covered all of them.
Okay. I think, unfortunately, we didn't get all our questions answered. But you have them, and
Madam
so
Chair, I will. When do you meet again? Tuesday? I'd love to come back.
Okay.
Brian's already got his schedule, though. I think you'll see a lot of me this year.
Okay. Well,
talk about my stuff all day here.
Yeah. Okay. We do have the minutes before us of January 27th.
So
we're going to copy move the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are accepted. Okay. We are adjourned.